What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 56 of the Lukewarm Games Podcast, your weekly source for unique perspectives on all things video games and pop culture. As always, I'm your host, Luke Lewis, this week joined by the true hero of Animal Crossing, Claire Helmberger.
That's me. Hey, everybody. How's it going? I'm doing good. How about you?
Doing well. This episode's coming up a little late, so apologies to listeners for that. This week was kind of the perfect storm of a lot of different things. There was Labor Day weekend, there was my first day at a new job, there was you had back to school night.
Yeah, that was a big problem.
Then you had a stomach bug.
Yeah.
Then we were just really tired. So this is coming in a couple days late, but we're excited to talk about topics and various things.
Oh yeah.
Nonetheless.
Super excited.
Speaking of topics,
I like
to do the occasional dead pause a la Greg Miller, because then if someone's listening to this on their car, there's a split second where they're like, oh, fuck, is my phone, like, did it pause? Did it
get messed up? You like messing with the people?
You gotta a little bit. You gotta have fun with it.
I don't know. I disagree.
You disagree? Listeners, write in and tell us whether you like a good bit or not.
Yeah. As someone whose phone frequently disconnects, and then that means I have to just be alone with my thoughts in silence for the rest of my drive.
You have no idea. I think it's because I grew up listening to Podcast Beyond, but they used to do so many, and they would wait like 25 seconds and then go, hey, bet you thought your phone wasn't working now, but you looked at your phone. Did you pull over your car while you're on your trucking job?
I mean, I'm not going to say it's not amusing.
Shout out to people driving trucking jobs while listening to this podcast. If you're driving a truck while listening to this podcast, write in.
If you're driving a trunk while listening to the podcast, honk your horn. No?
I imagine, like, I like to think there's, like, an 18-wheeler, and he's delivering PS5s to all the good people of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he's listening to, he or she, or listening to our podcast. It's good vibes.
Yeah, it is good vibes. It's a good vibes.
True heroes. Speaking of true heroes, segue.
Nice
we
segue.
Are talking about Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings
today, which
we got to see in theaters, the latest Marvel movie. But before we get to that, let's jump into We've Got the News, our weekly news segment where we break down what's going on in the entertainment industry. The story I pulled for us today is one that's near and dear to our hearts. Comes to us from IGN's own Adele Ankers. Spider-Man 2 writer began work on the film a year before the original came out. I'm sorry, I missaid it, Spider-Verse 2, not Spider-Man 2. But anyway, point being, we're talking about Into the Spider-Verse 2 news, and there's a lot to unpack in here.
Yeah.
I'm going to read just the top level of this story, and then we can discuss a little bit.
Yeah.
Shang-Chi writer David Callahan has revealed that he started working on Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse 2 a whole year before the first ambitious animated project was even released. Callahan said he also looked at still images of the art that they had been working on before even being asked to pitch a follow-up idea. So they were showing him, like, concept designs and things of the movie, like, long before it had even come out. Skipping ahead a little bit, it wasn't until that movie came out that it made any sense to anyone in the outside world what it was that he was up to, Callahan added. Then suddenly the interest went from 0 to 100 overnight. Suddenly people loved the movie, and a couple months later it wins an Oscar and the trajectory changes a bit. He admitted that Spider-Verse 2 has been in development for a very long time and that the script for the sequel had been ever evolving, so much so that he is still actually working on it. Though Lord and Miller are now both involved, he predictably will be writing stuff for the movie right up until its release, which is planned for October 7th of 2022.
Which is coming right the fuck up. For me, like, I'm
Definitely.
So stoked.
And I want to add in just this last little tidbit of news of, like, casting and those involved in the production, and then we can discuss all of it. Sony Pictures Animation's follow-up to Into the Spider-Verse has picked up steam in recent months, with the studio tapping a trio of directors to helm the film in April that include Joaquin Dos Santos, Justin K. Thompson, and sole co-director Kemp Powers. The voice cast expanded in June with Issa Rae joining the role of Jessica Drew, aka Spider-Woman.
Very exciting.
There's, like, multiple layers of cool to unpack here. So we're obviously big fans of Into the Spider-Verse. I was particularly excited to hear that the script has been in development for so long, because that makes me think that there is a really cool overarching story and narrative that they've been planning for a long time, which is rad.
Yeah.
I think this trio of directors is really special. And Issa Rae is dope, so getting her involvement as Spider-Woman could be really fun. What are your hype levels for Into the Spider-Verse 2 right now, Claire?
Through the roof. I am so stoked.
It just... What a great movie Into the Spider-Verse was, and such a pleasant surprise that I'm just so stoked we're getting more.
Absolutely. I mean, Into the Spider-Verse, for me, it's one of my favorite comic book movies of all time, if not my favorite comic book movie all time. And if you extend that to superhero movies in general, it's still right up there as, like, number one or...
It's definitely...
In the realm.
For me, like, top five superhero movies... Favorite animated movie for sure. Like, I can definitively say that. With a superhero one, I think I'd have to really sit down, but it's definitely up there.
Yeah, for sure.
I love Miles Morales as a character. I love the depiction of him in the film, the colors, the imagery, the art style. Shout out to friend of the show, Jessica Sanchez, Kind of Funny best friend, who for my first Kind of Funny Secret Santa gifted me the Into the Spider-Verse art book just weeks after the film had released. And we had just seen it, and I had fallen in love with it. And then I got that from her in the mail, and it was just the perfect timing of it. So this is obviously really a really cool. special film to us. But
absolutely.
There's not a ton to unpack within this news other than, like, let's get hyped for right. Spider-Verse 2. But, you know, I like to pull an entertainment story when we're doing a movie review, and I'll take any opportunity to gush about how much I love Into the Spider-Verse and how excited I am for the sequel. And it's... closer than you would think, you know what I mean? Like, we're almost
that's the big thing,
almost a year away, and it's one of those movies that I was kind of worried we would never get a sequel, just because it was so critically successful and it won an Oscar and everyone that saw it loved it, but I still feel like it was kind of an underrated movie at the time,
right?
Because it was such a surprise that it was so good.
It definitely didn't do as sense. Well at the box office, because I remember
we saw at the Pacific Science Center, for those who are in the Seattle area, we would always go see a movie with your mom and brothers around the holidays. We'd have kind of a Seattle Christmas shopping Seattle day. Good vibes. But anyway, we would always see a movie, and usually that would be a Star Wars film. In the subsequent years, it was always whatever the newest Star Wars one, because the theater is like giant IMAX, cool screens, surround sound, all that stuff.
Right. Well, historically, it was the Polar Express, because they used to show it at Christmas time every year.
As long as I've been a part of the tradition, it's been Star Wars. But anyway, my point was, that year we didn't have a Star Wars film, so it was like, oh, do we not want to go to a movie? And I had heard such positive buzz about this movie that I proposed, like, maybe we should see this. It's supposed to be really good. And everyone was down, because, you know, superhero movie, it'll probably be fun. But even your brothers were like, oh, it's animated? Oh, interesting. But then we all walked out of it, and we were all like, holy shit. And mom, your brothers, who I wouldn't necessarily have expected to love this movie, loved this movie. Like, it's such a special film.
But there were only, like, four other groups of people in the theater, which normally it's
like a crowded theater.
Like
a couple hundred people, because it's a big planetarium size.
We got there super early to wait in line so that we would have good seats, which you have to do because there's not reserved seating,
right?
And because we're just so used to being so packed that if you're not at least in the first half premiere of the weekend line, of
Star Wars,
if you're not in the first half of the line, you don't get to sit together. Like, that's how it usually works.
But, like, this was hype.
It was
such a cool moment.
It was such a cool experience.
I felt like it was one of those moments where I felt like we were one of the first to discover something, even though, like, other people saw it, but it felt like we were on the, like, right in the zeitgeist.
And we did see it really early. Yeah, which was
cool. So, very hyped for this one.
So hyped.
Can't wait.
Yeah, I think the thing that I'm most hyped about is how soon it's coming, because of how long it took them to make the first one.
Animation is so challenging, you know,
especially that particular style of animation. Like, I was expecting to have to wait many, many more years, especially with COVID, but to find out that it's scheduled for next year.
2018?
Was it?
Or
2019? 2018 sounds right.
I think it was 2018, because I believe we got Spider-Man PS4 in the fall of 2018, and then we subsequently that December got Into the Spider-Verse, I think.
Yeah.
So I remember that because I have a photo of me wearing my Insomniac Spider-Man shirt at Into the Spider-Verse. Yeah. So it was like, okay, I think that checks out.
I know that's 4 years, but I feel like this last, 18 months or whatever it's been, almost don't count.
Anything. Yeah. The fact that, totally. With that being said, COVID production was also involved in Shang-Chi, which we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Before we jump in, do you have any last Spider-Verse thoughts?
No, I think I've said all my stuff.
All right. So let's jump into our title track.
Let's do it.
Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. Claire, what were your expectations and just overall impressions going into this film? We're big MCU folks, but weren't super familiar with this property.
Right.
What were you expecting going in?
Yeah, like you said, big MCU folks. For me personally, I have zero comic book experience, like, with Marvel Comics. So I didn't really have any, like, background information about these characters or this property. And I also, going into the movie, I was purposefully avoiding, like, trailers and stuff. I think I'd seen maybe one trailer, maybe two, one and a half. I wasn't, like, seeking it out. I was, like, skipping them when they came, because I wanted to go in with that totally fresh perspective. And I was just expecting to find it really cool. And I was expecting to like it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I was expecting to like it as much as I did, for sure.
Definitely.
And to be, like, I was just absolutely blown away with how beautiful it was. So that wasn't something that I was expecting. I was expecting it to be cool. I was expecting it to be fun. I wasn't expecting to be, like, so stunningly beautiful the way that it was in many places. How about you? What were your expectations?
Yeah, I think my expectations were tempered but high, just considering, like, how many good movies the MCU has been putting out.
Yeah.
And especially in recent years, like, there really hasn't been a bad one. You could argue there hasn't been a true bad one ever, but, like, legitimately the last, you know, post Infinity War, like, it's, they've just been amped up and each one gets a little bit better and better and better in a sense.
I would argue that since Guardians 2, they've all been bangers.
Yeah, I'm not saying let me clarify my point, because I feel like I'll get a lot of flack. I'm not saying there weren't other bangers before that. I just mean they've been on such a hot streak of, like, I've enjoyed everyone that's come out so much that I expected to enjoy this one. But the fact that I didn't really know anything about Shang-Chi or his background or the characters involved, I didn't really know what to expect. I didn't know what type of movie this would be. Would it be more serious, akin to, like, the original Thor movies? Would it be really funny, like Ant-Man? Like, what was going to be the vibe of this movie? I was incredibly excited to see Simu Yu cast in this one.
Yeah, me too.
I'm a big fan of Kim's Convenience, and he's really good in that. He's really funny. He's very charming and personable, and I just thought he'd be cool in an MCU movie, and I love Awkwafina as well from both her comedic roles and her more serious roles, too. Like, I think she's a really great actress, so like, I was just excited at a base level, the fact that it's set in the Bay Area.
Well, for a little bit.
Well, like, his character is established in the Bay Area, let's put it that way. Obviously, the movie goes other places. And for context, I think we'll stick spoiler-free for this first little discussion, and then maybe we'll jump into some spoilers towards the end. But yeah, so I was definitely excited to see the movie. And then I think as soon as early reviews started coming in and people in our friend circles had started to see it, it was clear that it was something special. And my expectations started to get heightened.
Yeah.
So by the time we finally saw it on the Monday after it came out, I was blown away. I loved it. I thought, like you said, visually, it was not at all what I expected. I think Greg Miller said it best in the Kind of Funny review they did, but he said the movie's magical.
Mm-hmm.
And I think visually it looks magical. I think they do such unique things with CG. I think the fight choreography is arguably the best we've seen as far as, like, hand-to-hand combat in the MCU. Like, I think it looks so slick. And they utilize the characters, like, physical abilities and the sets so well, in a way that I almost was anticipating fight scenes in a way of, like, a John Wick movie. Like, they would get to a set piece moment and I would be like, oh man, it's gonna go down, and then it would be the coolest thing, and then it would amp up to a cooler thing, and, you know, it, there's just a lot of spectacle. And I think specifically I wasn't sure about, like, the level of comedy versus action, but I think it strikes a nice balance in making characters that you care about having heartfelt, tender moments, but also having some levity and some good humor
throughout. Sure.
So it really hit for me, and I'm excited to see this character in future MCU properties for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Me too. I will say that I think that it does strike a really good balance between the levity, like you were saying, and the heartfelt moments. I was expecting it to be a little bit more comedic than it was, but I also just wasn't expecting the story to be as emotionally, I think it was like much more emotionally deep than I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the way they handled it all was really beautiful. And I think that was really special, especially as someone, like you said, we're fans of Kim's Convenience, but like specifically we were fans of Kim's Convenience at first. And then we heard about all the stuff that was going on behind the scenes and we both just kind of fell off of it. And we both really felt that Simulu's character in that show just kind of got shortchanged. I mean, like, we loved him in the show and the other actors and actresses as well.
Yeah.
But he's the one who's in this movie, so we're talking about him. And it was just really great to get to see him kind of show his chops and do the stuff that he was telling the Kim's Convenience people that he was capable of and not given the shot to do.
Well, and it was such a cool thing. I'd have to go back and pull the tweets, but he tweeted out years ago, before this movie was even in production, hey, I want to play Shang-Chi.
Yeah.
I want to do it. And then he retweeted it after he was cast. And he's like, you got to shoot your shots. Because he just like put it out there that he wanted to do it. And Marvel took notice of that and then cast him in this movie. And he put in the work. And I just think that's so cool and so inspiring.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
We haven't even talked about just like the level of representation I think that this movie brings for Asian American heroes. Like, this is the first proper Asian American hero we've had in the MCU.
Yeah.
Which I think is dope.
About damn time.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. It's stupid that we haven't had it prior, but I'm so glad that Shang-Chi is here, and I'm so glad that the movie was as good as it was and that it's performing well in the box office despite COVID restrictions and things. And you know, we're trying to stay safe, everybody's trying to stay safe, but this movie still did well because I was worried that it wasn't going to perform well and then executives would be like, oh, we can't do diverse, but no, but it's performing really well. So I think if anything, it speaks to that this is what people want, this is what the type of stories that are worth telling, and so that's rad.
Absolutely.
Really rad.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned that you were afraid for its performance because of COVID and the fact that they're only releasing it in theaters and not on streaming.
Sure.
We were also scared for ourselves because we almost had to leave the theater.
Yeah.
When we went to go see it.
Give a little context to that. So we went to a theater that has in the past been socially distancing to the extent of you buy your two seats, for example, and then they rope off the seats next to you. Like, no one can sit two seats on either side of you. And that's how we saw A Quiet Place 2 and Black Widow. And I think those are the only two movies we've seen. And because, we're trying to be safe with COVID. Obviously, we're vaccinated. But it's still really uncomfortable to sit next to a total stranger.
And you don't know if they're vaccinated and not wearing their mask.
As you're eating popcorn and things like that. So
they're coughing.
We were really only comfortable going to this theater because of those distancing procedures. So we got into Shang-Chi. And immediately people are sitting next to us. And I think we both felt quite uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So we debated leaving, but then we went and checked with the box office manager. And they were able to give us new seats in a row where no one else was sitting. And we had to sit in the very front row, which wasn't the most comfortable. But we were so determined to see this movie.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be socially distanced.
Yeah.
And you did too. But
I'm just glad we got to see it.
Yeah,
and
I am too.
I adjusted and to the position, honestly.
I think it was fine. And the movie was totally worth it. So,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
But I will say, like, I totally understand people. I've had many friends say, like, I really want to see this movie, but I just don't feel comfortable going to theaters. Like, I hear you, and it's so frustrating to me that Disney can't look past that. And while what happened with Black Widow was questionable because they cut ScarJo out of a ton of money.
Right.
Like, Disney needs to take the hit on this and
pay their cast and crew,
but also acknowledge that it's just not safe for some people to be able to go to the theaters to see it, which I just read a news story also before this that we're getting off kind of in a financial tangent.
We got a whole episode.
Disney basically said that based on the success of Shang-Chi at the box office, they're going to keep Eternals in November as theaters only and not streaming at all for its first 45 days. Because this was kind of a test bed of, like, if Shang-Chi didn't perform well, they'd put Eternals on streaming services day and date for that $30 price point that they did with Black Widow. But since it did well, now they're not going to do that. And it kind of sucks. It's a bummer. I was hoping that they would backpedal on that. And ultimately, they have announced that Shang-Chi will be available on Disney Plus for that extra price. I think it's after 45 days, so it'll be like mid-October where folks can see it again. And I want to see it again, but I'm hesitant to go where there's a giant group of people that I don't know, and I don't know what their situation is. Are they vaccinated? Are they social distancing? Like, it's just hard to trust people right now, which kind of sucks.
Yeah, and especially we're both in positions where not only would it be deeply problematic if either of us had to quarantine, but we're also in high-risk positions of getting it at work.
Yeah, so, like, we're working closely with our coworkers, but, you know, we're at places where our coworkers are vaccinated, our coworkers are socially distancing, our coworkers are taking it seriously because our jobs depend on us taking it seriously. So, yeah, it's kind of frustrating.
But I also work with children who are too young to get vaccinated, so...
Right. There's a lot of factors in it, too, that... make it so we especially want to stay safe and protect our loved ones and protect our friends and family. With that, anyway, jumping back to the movie, because this movie was really amazing.
Yeah,
and
I
immediately, the stress of trying to find a socially distant seat once we did,
and
the movie started, I was in it. I was in this movie. We haven't talked about the music, but I want to give a huge shout out to the score. I thought the score
was
fantastic. It encapsulated that magical element so well, and just it took us on such an epic ride throughout. It just suited every scene in such a great way,
and it also incorporated traditional Chinese instruments like in a really interesting way that I thought was really cool, like within the orchestral typical MCU film soundtrack,
you know. And we studied world music a fair bit in college, and it was cool to see those instruments that aren't widely used and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool, very cool. Do we have... because I want to get into character development and, like, favorite moments and things like that, but that's more spoiler territory. Do you have any, like, closing... let's say this is the last statement before we jump into spoilers for folks who haven't seen the movie yet that are waiting to either see it on streaming or waiting for a safe opportunity to see it.
Yeah. I just think that this film was straight movie magic, and it was gorgeous, and it was so much fun.
Yeah.
And I think that it didn't just feel like your stereotypical run-of-the-mill superhero movie. Like, it was special, and it was unique. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I would just add on to that. I thought it was excellent. I thought it was well worth seeing. I think if you appreciate any of the MCU movies, you gotta see this one, because I think it legitimately is something different to the formula. And I would honestly say, even if you're not a fan of the MCU movies, I think this movie stands alone in a unique way, that if you enjoy action movies, if you enjoy heartfelt, you know, character development, cool moments, magical, fantastical things...
It also wasn't, like, super bogged down in the MCU lore. Like, it did stand alone, like you said.
When we get into spoilers, it does do some very unique tie-ins and cool things to connect it that I think make it quite brilliant in that way.
Yeah. You just don't need to have that context
correct,
to enjoy the film.
Like, it's still great on its own, but I think it's really exceptional when you consider, like, everything leading up to it and coming afterwards. Cool. So we're about 23 going into 24 minutes, going full spoilers for Shang-Chi. If you haven't seen the movie, save this one. It's definitely worth the wait, and we'll be here when you're able to see it safely.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's get right into it. I just thought the entire cast was really fantastic.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, I didn't necessarily expect the level of comedy that we got, although I did to an extent, just because Awkwafina is more of a comedic actor, so
I expected more comedy than we got.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I misinterpreted then.
Well, just because, like I said, I didn't see all the trailers, and the ones that I saw did seem like they were leaning into the comedic aspect, so I was expecting more of the film to be like the initial bus fight scene.
All the trailers we had gotten, I really expected the most most of the movie to emphasize, like, the combat and the hand-to-hand fighting and choreography. And I think that's definitely a large part of the film. But there is a level of comedy. I don't think it's, like, as funny as, say, a Guardians or an Ant-Man. Mm-hmm. But I think there definitely are laugh-out-loud moments. Specifically, the big spoiler that I didn't want to discuss was Trevor Slattery's involvement in this one. So the character who was acting as the...
The Mandarin is what he called himself.
Yes, that's what he calls himself.
Appropriated the Ten Rings.
Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
Is a character in this movie, and he is hilarious. Ben Kingsley crushes it. I thought he was so funny. And
his little Morris.
His magical creature friend, and just the way they interact with this world of Tao Lo, I think is the name.
Tao Lo, yeah.
Is the name of the, like, magical dimension that Shang-Chi's mother is from. But just, like, walk me through, what did you think of the cast of this movie, Claire, and the different characters?
I thought the cast was wonderful, and I think they all just did a fantastic job as their characters. I think that, well, like I was saying earlier, I think that we really got to see Simu Liu, like, flex his, not just his muscles, but his acting muscles.
Yeah, no.
Like, he just brought such an incredible depth to the character.
For sure.
And then I really loved Awkwafina's portrayal, and, like, I think it was really subtle in the way that she was, like, grappling with her identity as well throughout the film. And also just, like, being suddenly caught in the middle of this, like, super intense family drama.
Yeah, I appreciated her, and while I don't think every, like, comedic beat she had landed for me, I appreciated the heart of her character, and I really bought into her friendship with Shang-Chi and how they developed over time. And I also appreciated that at the end it wasn't a romantic thing.
Yeah.
Like, they could just be platonic, really good friends who supported each other and meant something to each other. And I just thought that was cool.
Yeah,
in a 2021 movie that we could do that, and they didn't need to have a kiss.
They didn't need to shoehorn it
to put a bow on it so that we all felt like there was development.
We didn't need a Raylo situation here. Yeah, like it was just really great the way that it was.
But there
it
was didn't need to be growth anymore. And development. Yeah. Like, they grew, like... I don't want to say professionally, because it's not like, but in a sense it is, because they went from, like, not having careers and goals to having this, like, you know, path in front of them, and they're going to be heroes, and they're going to be involved in the Avengers and things. Like, I just thought that was really cool.
It was kind of like a coming of age story.
Yeah.
Even though they were not, like, teenagers or anything.
But I think that's what was interesting.
They were, like, lost, and then they found themselves, and they found
and
a way.
Maybe that's just me as, like, a mid-20 something trying to figure my shit out, but I just thought that was really cool and relatable and natural of a story arc.
You can have a coming of age story with 10-year-olds Miyazaki style, and you can have a coming of age story with late 20 somethings just trying to figure out what the fuck is going on.
Yeah, so I appreciated that. I thought his sister was a really cool character, and I think their father, the Mandarin, even though he doesn't call himself the Mandarin, I just thought their relationship was one of the most interesting relationships in the MCU, in a sense. Like, as a villain, the fact that he just wanted to rescue their mom and have them all be a family again, but how twisted their upbringing was, like, how he trained them to fight and be trained assassins and things like this. Like,
it was almost like WandaVision, like, the real bad guy is grief.
Yeah, but, like, it was so cool in a sense, because it was an origin movie, but it didn't feel like an origin movie.
Right.
Like, we didn't have to go through, like, the first hour plus with young Shang-Chi, like, learning how to fight. Like, they streamlined everything in such a way that I thought the pacing was really brilliant, and it kept it moving in such a way that I was always interested.
Yeah, for sure.
And it didn't feel like it had this bog down of, like, oh, this is when he became a hero. It's like...
Yeah.
No, he always was, in a sense, but then he, like, found himself, and then, like, the moment on the Muni where he's forced to fight, like, brought it out of him, and that fight scene is so dope.
It's so cool.
It's so cool, and the choreography, the way it's shot, he's flying out the window, he's punching guys, Katie's driving the bus, like, that whole sequence was honestly probably my favorite scene in the
really
whole
cool.
movie, and not to say that it's, like, downhill from there, because it's definitely not, but, like, it starts on such a high level and just keeps going, and it's very good.
Well, technically, from the start of the bus scene, it is all downhill for a little while.
Da-doom.
Anyway, yeah, the choreography was like, I really appreciated not having the typical origin story of like, wait, I have powers now. Right. What will happen next? Right. It's just here we go.
And it was kind of cool that he was just like Katie was the audience at that moment of like, what you have powers? Fuck? What's going on? Oh my God. And he's like, I got to get on a plane. Sorry. And it's just like, oh, so you know about this. And then it does a quick recap of like his father trained him. His mother was murdered. His father wanted him to go after the murderers.
Yeah.
And then he ran away. Like, and it was just like...
The way that they, like, recapped his childhood and also his sister's childhood throughout the film in, like, small snippets, I think was really well done. And it, like, worked through the timeline. I just thought that was really cool because it...
Oh, yeah.
Because it wasn't, like, an info dump all at once in the beginning, but it also, like, each little bit of information you got, it was, like, connected to what he was going through in the moment as an adult.
It was very relevant, yeah.
And it, like, gave you new piece of information, like, towards the end, when you see that, you know, he was there when the thugs came and killed his mom, and then his first mission was to go after them, and he, quote, didn't go through with it, but then you find out that he did.
Right. But that's interesting, too, because then there's, like, little twists and things that you're learning along the way.
And it's just, like, the emotional journey that you were on and you were on there right there with him was just, like, so, I think, so well done. And I also I really appreciated the way, and we mentioned a little bit earlier about the father character and how he's interesting as a villain. Because it's not just so black and white as, like, he's an inherently evil person.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, like, expecting at the start of the film, it was, like, my dad was just... you know, trained me to be an assassin, all this stuff. Like, I was expecting it to be, like, a Red Room situation where, I don't remember his name, but the guy who ran the Red Room was just straight up just a bad fucking guy. Yeah.
Striker, or what I think is his name. Yeah.
I mean, his dad was a terrorist, but also, like, there was depth there, and there was depth to their relationship, and he wasn't just an abusive father who ruined this kid's life. Like, there was more to it than
that. I also think the fact that he's, like, thousands of years old and has experienced all these wars and different events.
Yeah,
like,
that was a really interesting
the line where he's, like, young man, and the guy looks way older than him, and he's like, young man, don't, I've been around for, and it's just like, whoa, that's kind of, for the first time when a older character uses that line, it doesn't feel condescending and annoying, it feels like, whoa, that's like,
really
interesting to me.
Yeah.
Just because, like, I don't know, the fact that he was, like, when he met their mother, and he found Tao Lo, he was at such a place where he was like, I've done everything. I don't need to do everything. But then he found, like, this new challenge in his relationship with their mother and their family. And I don't know. It just, it felt very grounded, but also, you know, had this element of, like, science fiction going on in the background with multiple worlds and things like that. Like, it just was really interesting to me.
I also just, I appreciated that, like, as they added the layers, at the beginning, it seems like, their mother died, and that was what was holding him back from kind of just forcing them to be assassins and not caring for their souls and being a bad father.
Right.
But, like, then you find out that he was training, at least he was training Shang-Chi, not his sister at the time.
Right.
Because he wanted revenge and also just wanted him to be able to protect himself. And, like, you saw, there was that flashback where he was like, I'm gonna go find the guys. Do you want to come with? And little Shang-Chi was like, yeah, I want to come with. And then he was like, do you want to learn how to fight these guys? And he was like, yeah, I'm in. Like,
there's also that cool scene where Shang-Chi's, like, little kid punching the pole.
Yeah.
And the dad is like, that's enough. And he's, like, helping him bandage up his hands. And he's like, you have to sharpen your mind. Like, have you been practicing your English? Have you been doing this? And it's like, that's kind of cool because that's not what I would expect from that character of, like, he is trying to make his son, like, the best version of himself, even though it's in this fucked up way. I don't know. There was just a lot of depth to the character that I think, like, I don't know. I compare another origin movie of this caliber to Ant-Man, for example. Likeable character, but the villain in that movie is so one-dimensional.
Yeah.
In comparison to Shang-Chi, it just... there's so much going on and so much emotion and so much to process in unique ways here.
Well, also, I totally agree. But also, is his dad the main villain? is what's the father's name? Wenwu.
Yeah.
Wenwu. Is he the main villain?
I would say so.
Okay. Because there's also the...
Because up until the very end, when we have, creatures. Like, the giant creature to fight, the demon creature, if you will, the dad is the one unleashing that.
Right.
So I almost felt like...
It was his grief that was...
Yeah, I felt like it was, like, manifested.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it didn't. Like, this creature existed outside of the dad. But I felt like, symbolically in the story, Shang-Chi was defeating his father's grief, his father's, like, demons, in a sense. And the voices the dad had been hearing that he thought were the mother's was this creature. So I thought, in a sense, it was, like, very symbolic of that. So I would say he is the villain, but I think, like, his grief and his pain is, like, the overarching, like, true villain of the story, absolutely, if you will.
Yeah, which is just, it's so cool. And I will say that metaphor is kind of what, like, seals up the only kind of complaint I have with the film, which is just that it kind of seemed like a sharp turn out of left field that suddenly there are these demons who are going to destroy the Earth. But, like, if you do read it as a metaphor for grief, it's a lot more compelling.
I only had one complaint with the movie, and it was just a casting thing. So, the Mandarin father had his right-hand man, Razor Fist, the, like, big, burly, only white guy in the army, you know what
with
I mean?
With the sword hand.
Yeah, that had, like, the car that they ended up stealing.
Yeah.
I just thought he was an odd choice, and the amount of times we had to have dialogue with that character, it was just like, I don't need this character. I want to see more of the father, I want to see more of Shang-Chi, like, I don't need whatever's going on with you, you know what I mean? He just felt unnecessary to me, and he did that feel sounds unnecessary. Like that sounds very nitpicky, and it definitely is, because it didn't at all distract from the movie. I just thought it was an odd choice to make his character so, like, visible and have so many spoken dialogue moments if you weren't going to, like, actually really progress or do anything with that character. Like, we don't know his backstory or anything, or why he was involved in the army, or what he went to do afterwards, or like, he was in the movie enough to the point where I feel like we should know more about him, but I don't necessarily want to know more about him. It's kind of the weird paradigm I feel like I'm in with that. But anyway, small thing. No, I just wanted to say that because I just was like, odd choice that he was in it as much as he was. But I thought everyone's performances were great, and like I said, just the visuals of this movie, like, it's so stunning. And we haven't specifically talked about the fight scene at the end when they're battling in Tao Lo, and there's all the archers and the flaming arrows, and they're fighting this giant battle, and then this monster, and he's riding a dragon at one point.
Yeah.
In the final, like, climactic moment. Like, it's so cool.
It is so cool.
It's so hype.
It's so cool. The choreography is all just so fantastic. And the thing that I always say about fight choreography is, like, if a fight is well choreographed, if action is well choreographed, you always know exactly what's happening. You know exactly where everyone is, exactly who's, like, winning, and what, you know what's going on. And you don't need slow motion to make it clear what's happening. I think a lot of movies, they're either, their action is so fast-paced but, like, unclear that you don't really always know what's going on, and then you just kind of, like, zone out because you don't know what's going on, or they, like, throw in slow-mo just so you can understand what's happening, which is usually the sign of a poorly choreographed fight. But I really appreciate it in this film how the fight feels like you could always know what was going on, but the slow motion is thrown in there for character development purposes, because the fighting style is part of each character's, like, identity, and that was so cool.
But it's also used subtly in a way that I feel like doesn't take you out of the moment. Like, we reviewed the Snyder Cut on this podcast, which I would argue that slow-mo is overused in that movie because it's so long that you stop and wonder why you're still watching what you're watching. Whereas in Shang-Chi, I feel like it's stylish and adds to
the overall product. It's all about the characters. Like, the fight scene when Shang-Chi's parents first meet each other.
Yeah,
that was cool. Like, it cuts into slow-mo a fair bit in that scene, but it's so you can see the characters, like, reacting to each other. And there's, like, the beautiful ethereal music playing. Like, it's not action music, and it's just, it's so cool.
I think the acting in that scene is really spot on, too. Like, just the subtle facial expressions. Like, words aren't even exchanged. You know what I mean?
And they didn't need to be. Like,
yeah, exactly. I also wanted to give a shout-out while we're talking about fight choreography to the scene in China when they're on the scaffolding, like, outside the building, and they're flipping around. That was one of the scenes where I was like, I'm getting John Wick vibes from this, because the lighting and the neon of the city, and then the way they play with verticality and the camera, it's really well done, but it's at the same time not overly complicated, if that makes sense. Like, they're not relying on crazy explosions or gunfire or all these things. It's pure hand-to-hand combat, and the stunt team on this movie, I think, deserves, like, super high praise, because they're doing wild stuff that is incredibly difficult, I imagine, and it just looks so visually cool the way it's all edited together.
Absolutely. Do you have any other characters you want to talk about?
I want to give a shout out. We didn't really talk about the sister character very much.
Xiaoling.
Yeah, Xiaoling. I just think really well portrayed. I think added another dimension to Shang-Chi's character, because, you know, he was that older brother figure that she needed, and when he left, she had to fend for herself. And I think her leading into future MCU movies is going to be very interesting. Obviously, at the end of this one, we get the post-credit scene where she essentially takes over her father's army.
Mm-hmm.
There's been some speculation. I know Paris Lilly of Kind of Funny X-Cast speculated on Twitter that potentially at the end of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Sharon Carter is talking to Xiaoling. Which I think would make sense based on her involvement in, like, the underground crime scene within Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Very interesting.
So I'm interested to see how her character specifically is going to play, whether it's a villain role, whether it's kind of an anti-hero role in the future films.
The thing that's interesting about the post-Endgame MCU is who's a villain and who's a hero is a lot more complicated, which we saw really delved into, I think, in Falcon and the Winter Soldier with the terrorist organization. And where we had that interaction with Sharon Carter. I think that that is something that we're going to see more and more of, and I'm here for it, because the cut and dry, this guy's bad because he's bad stuff is, that's past. We don't need that anymore. Right. We did that, and it wasn't very much fun, and let's move on.
Sure. I think on top of that, too, though, this movie is an interesting representation of the future of the MCU, because I remember seeing Endgame and thinking, this is the pinnacle of comic book movies. This is the moment. This is the greatest. As a comic book fan, this is what I wanted, and we got it. How are they going to keep it going? Because they announced all these plans. They got phases and phases and decades of movies planned and all this stuff. And I remember thinking, like, I'm down. I want to see them because I love comic book movies. But, like, are they ever going to hit that emotional high again? Like, are we going to hit a point of burnout? Because I have friends who are, like, casual MCU fans who saw a couple movies here and there but don't really have interest in watching 23 films in order to understand the nuances that make all of them great, which I understand if you're not, like, entrenched in it and a fan of comics in general. But this movie, to me, represents the future in a sense that this took a property that I had no prior knowledge of and made me totally invested in the world and the characters after going on this adventure. And if they can continue to do that with these upcoming films like Eternals, and as they introduce new characters and worlds, I think we have a whole lot to still be excited about in the MCU, which is really, really cool.
Yeah, definitely. It is really cool. This was just a really cool film all around.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Oh,
good stuff.
Oh, before we move on from characters, there was one more thing I just wanted to mention, because we talked a little bit about Trevor Slattery before.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to mention that we watched Iron Man 3 leading
and
up to
All Hail the King.
Right. Short. The one shot. And that was, that really kind of,
I was so glad we watched
it.
And it was one of those where I was like, why are people saying you need to watch this? But a lot of people were saying it, so I was hyped up for the movie, so I was like, mm-hmm. why not? We got time. Do you want to watch it? And we threw it on, and I really enjoy Iron Man 3 just as a standalone film, but the amount of... It was fun to get all that Trevor Slattery context going into Shang-Chi, because it made it even more satisfying, I think, when he popped in.
Definitely. More satisfying when he popped in this film. And it also was really cool how, like, they planned out that tie-in all the way back.
Right. Well, and my thought was, I was thinking about the fact of people were so angry when Iron Man 3 came out that were true comic book fans and understood the Mandarin as a character and the lore behind it. They were like, why did you make a joke out of it? This is so lame. This is so offensive. But then once you see where they were going with it, it's really cool.
Right.
And it's like, oh, wow, even in 2013, you were thinking ahead to Shang-Chi, you know.
Right.
Almost a decade later.
Yeah.
Which is kind of wild.
And the other thing I really appreciated about it was that there were two parts. So the conversation before we even knew Trevor Slattery was, like, being held in the prison or whatever.
Right.
With the father and the two kids and Awkwafina was there, too.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about him, but he was referencing him. He said he appropriated my rings and he made himself a name based on, like, an American dish or whatever. Like, the chicken,
a chicken dish.
He called me an orange, like, all this stuff. and it's just, like... I like how they kind of appreciate or kind of acknowledge the fact that, you know, the name Mandarin is kind of a racist name to give an Asian villain.
Well, and then it's funny, too, because I think you pointed it out, too, and we were talking about it, and I enjoyed it. But when Trevor Slattery comes on screen in Shang-Chi, he has that moment where he's like, I know, I appropriated the name. It was very bad, and I thought I was playing a terrorist, but it turns out we were a terrorist. And then I served my time, and now I'm here, and they were going to kill me, but... now I'm their performer.
They saw me perform
Shakespeare, and then they were blown away. And so now once a week I give a performance, and it's just like, oh my God, that's hilarious.
I appreciated how he kind of came to realize that what he had done was wrong on multiple levels, and he was better for it. That was a cool arc too. That kind of like tied up that loose end, because I remember in Iron Man 3, I was like, oh, this guy is kind of funny and doesn't quite seem like a bad guy, but like he also did some fucked up stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like he kind of got that arc, which was
an
interesting, you know, thing to happen all these years later.
We also talk about the aunt character, Michelle Yeoh, who played the grandmother in Crazy Rich Asians, and she's been in a lot of other stuff, but she's really great, and I was stoked to see her in this movie and in all the battle scenes and stuff. It's cool to have her in there as well. Yeah. Just a really great cast.
And, like, all the Talo stuff and, like, the sets were beautiful and all the creatures, the little Pokemon. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was cool.
So I'm curious, as we're talking about this movie, we've discussed a bit how it relates to the other MCU movies just in terms of, like, balancing well-choreographed action with bits of comedy, but also having this magical, fantastical element with the dimensions and worlds that are being played with. How would you compare this in your kind of overall rankings of the MCU in terms of, like, I kind of break up the MCU in tiers of, like, there's like that really high tier, truly exceptional, like, favorite films. Then there's that middle tier where these are really, really great movies. And then that bottom tier where I would say that lower third of, like, these are all good. I enjoy them for what they are, but they're not as special as some of these.
Yeah.
Upper level movies. Where would you put Shang-Chi? I'm sorry.
I definitely think it's in the top 15 and maybe even the top 10. I'd have to look at my list, but I think it probably for me falls somewhere around where Black Panther is on the list. And I think my brain kind of drew a comparison between these two films because they both had these like moments of like there's another world. And there's, like, this bioluminescence, and there's the fantasticalness of it, and just the sheer beauty of Talo versus...
Wakanda.
Wakanda, all of Wakanda,
but also
sure.
Just like
but specifically the afterlife scenes in Black Panther.
Yeah.
And then, I can't remember what it's called, because it's been a whole long time. But, do you remember how they had, the underground garden where they grew the flower that gave the Black Panther powers?
Mm-hmm.
those scenes specifically are what I'm thinking of being, like, truly, visually just,
very
like,
different
magical.
Than the rest of the...
Yeah. And different from the rest of the MCU, because a lot of the more, like, action-y, especially, films, they don't have necessarily that level of fantastical beauty.
Definitely.
And also, like, Guardians 2 has it with the space stuff, so I thought it was all beautiful.
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, I was looking, I pulled up my Letterboxd app just to see where I ended up ranking it, and I have it incredibly high. I put Shang-Chi at number 7 for me. I just really enjoyed this movie, and while I love everything that's below it, it just really hit on such a level. So I put it, so for listeners, I'll read off my top 10 just because I think it's somewhat interesting for context of like where my tastes and opinions lie in the MCU. So I have Endgame as number 1, Infinity War, Homecoming, Thor Ragnarok, Civil War, Winter Soldier, Shang-Chi, Black Panther, Guardians of the Galaxy, Iron Man, and Loki. That's my top 10.
Mm-hmm.
And that's looking at that, I really love that top 10. Like,
yeah.
I, those are just those all are bangers, and they're all really unique and special for different reasons. And
yeah. Loki had that too. The Lamentous 1 episode. Was that episode 3 with the like purple? I'm thinking about that visual beauty, true visual beauty.
And to kind of jump to my next question, which is where do you want to see these characters in the future? I feel like this, along with Loki, set up really unique places for the MCU to go. We're getting into these multi-dimensions that we'll obviously start to see in the new Spider-Man No Way Home, as well as Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness. Like, I'm really excited for Marvel to play with multi-dimensions and all these different things, and I also really respect that I think they're doing it in a way that's easily digestible.
Yeah,
like I think if you've followed the MCU movies up until this point, I think it makes sense what's going on, even if you're not a huge comics lore person. And I think they're doing it in a way that's compelling to people who understand the origins, but also engaging for newcomers as well, which I think is a challenging line to walk, and I think they're nailing it.
Yeah, definitely. One thing that I'm looking forward to seeing more of is I really want to know Katie, what her powers that she's getting recruited for, because they clearly saw something in her, and like she did the really cool thing of, without very much training in archery, was able to pull off like an impossible shot. But I wonder if there's like something more going on there that we didn't really get to see, that was just sort of hinted at.
I could kind of see her being like a Sharon Carter-esque character, where it's like, you're not super powered, but you're a capable agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
But
or,
in
you
what
know
way
what I mean?
Specifically? Like, what did Wong see in her?
And we haven't talked about Wong's appearance in this movie either, but I was stoked when he was in the cage match with Abomination. Like, that was awesome.
And then they were, and like, then, talking afterwards, like, you're not supposed to hit me so hard. Like, it was all staged.
Right.
That was
and
super
then
fun.
To see him in the post-credits scene, kind of inducting Shang-Chi and Katie into the fold of the Avengers, which is cool, and then they sing karaoke, which was hilarious.
That was
and
also
awesome.
Fun. Also, while we're giving shout-outs, shout-out to Ronnie Chang from The Daily Show, who had a small appearance.
Was he the Fight Club
guy?
Okay. Yeah, that was funny.
That was funny. I was like, is that Ronnie Chang? In
great. Just great costume? Casting across the board, but I'm just excited to see, you know, future movies where Shang-Chi teams up with other Avengers. Like, I've seen people talking about how cool would, like, a Bay Area team-up movie of Ant-Man and Shang-Chi.
And
like, I think that would be really cool. I, you know, down the road when we get more large-scale ensemble movies akin to Civil War or Infinity War, like, it'll be awesome to see him fighting alongside different characters. And, yeah, just hyped. Just
absolutely.
Very hyped. Shall we move on to our closing...
Let's
questions
do
with
it.
Claire, do you have any thing we haven't mentioned?
I don't think so.
I think at this point we've made it very clear we really enjoyed the movie.
Very much so.
If you've listened this far, you probably watched it as well, and we'd love to hear your thoughts in the comments.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Hit us up. Questions with Claire, take it away.
All right, this week's question: what is your most anticipated upcoming MCU movie?
Dun, dun, dun.
Are there any more shows after What If? Or are we done with shows?
No, we are not done with shows. I believe, I don't remember the exact order, but I know we get Hawkeye this year.
forgot about that.
Miss Marvel is also
right. That's exciting.
Happening soon. There's more. Obviously, those are the two. Like,
yeah,
I think coming up next. I believe it's Miss Marvel and then Hawkeye. I could be wrong.
Right on.
Do you have one?
Throw those in there. Let's include it. MCU in general.
Yeah. So mine, obviously, my number one right now is Spider-Man. I think that trailer was phenomenal. I think seeing Doc Ock, Alfred Molina coming back, super hyped.
Now, when is that supposed to come out?
December.
Okay.
This year.
So it's Eternals and then Spider-Man.
Yeah, Eternals in November and Spider-Man in December. So we still that's currently what it's set, you know. I mean, things could shift around, but I'm pretty sure both movies are done. Like, they've wrapped production, so they're just sitting on them. So I think at this point there wouldn't make much sense to delay anything, but we'll see. I just think that trailer that we got was so cool. I think everything they're doing with Doctor Strange involvement and multi-dimensional things and the rumors of Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield being involved, and you also hear Willem Dafoe's like Green Goblin cackle in the trailer as the grenade, the iconic like Green Goblin grenade is dropped. Like, little things like that just make me so excited for what this movie could be. And there's so much like fan speculation going on. Spider-Man's one of my favorite heroes, so that's definitely one for me.
Absolutely.
I'm also gonna give a huge shout out to Miss Marvel, just because I think I read her comic earlier leading into Kamala Khan being a playable character in Marvel's Avengers last year. And I just think she's such a cool character, a Pakistani girl. Another coming of age story, but I think one people haven't seen if you're not familiar with that character. And I think everything I've seen visually from set photos, it just really seems like they're hitting on all cylinders for that show. And I'm really excited to see what happens with that one. How about you?
Very cool. I'm really excited for Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, because I know that we're going to see more of Wanda.
Yeah, in I'm interested to see what she's been up to post WandaVision.
And after the way Loki ended, I'm just like really stoked to just dive into that multiverse stuff, which I think we will do in Spider-Man too, before we get to Multiverse of Madness. So I'm also excited for Spider-Man, because I think that's going to be related. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm just like, after Loki, I'm just like, let's see what the fuck. This is and What If as well,
for sure,
while we're watching right now, with all the
What If has been stuff. A fun, like, kind of idea percolating show for me. Like, I'm enjoying it, but I think what's been the most fun is just me thinking of other ideas of things that could happen in the multiverse and theories, and like coming up with different ideas myself has been the most fun.
Yeah.
And that makes me really excited for down the road too, when we start getting introduced to X-Men characters, Fantastic Four gets involved, because I think that's ultimately going to be the big climactic thing of this phase, is the introduction of some level of X-Men characters.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. MCU, good times.
Good times.
Claire, thank you so much for joining this week, as always.
My pleasure, as always.
Good times talking about MCU. Listeners, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Some quick housekeeping items. Please subscribe to our show on your podcast platform of choice. We are now officially on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. If you enjoy our podcast, consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/lukewarmgames for exclusive podcasts and more. You can follow our show at Lukewarm Games on Twitter to get the latest updates on our show. And with that, have a fantastic week. Cheers and happy gaming.